The year was 1991. The place, the Consumer Electronics Show. Nintendo and Sony were working together to bring a CD-ROM version of the Super Famicom to the market. A mere 24 hours later, inexplicably creating a shockwave that would change the history of video games as we know it, Nintendo severed its partnership with Sony to go and make the same product with the inferior Philips Corporation. It was then that the path of vengeance was created. Sony knew what it had to do, and 3 years later, the legend arrived in the PlayStation 1. For the next 25 years, including the current year of our Lord, 2019, and with no stops of slowing down, the PlayStation brand has brought its brand of excellence across four home consoles, multiple portable handhelds, long live the Vita, and recently into the world of virtual reality. And that brand has no end in sight as it keeps moving toward its singular goal for gamers around the world, young and old, of all genders, races, religions, and knacks. This is the show all about recognizing this excellence. This is the show to celebrate the worlds and experiences that we get to play in. This is the show that highlights amazing developers doing shoes work. This is the show where greatness awaits. Welcome to the Road to Greatness. I am your host, Kyle Stevenson, along with the best co-host in all the land, Joseph, Mr. Bad Bit. How you doing, buddy?
Man, what an intro. I'm doing fantastic. I'm energized. I'm ready to rock. And before we begin, I want to thank all the amazing patrons over at patreon.com/badbit. It is you who have made this show possible. Thank you so very much. And as you know, patrons at the $5 and up level get this show first, and then everybody else a week later. And it's all about, the latest, the greatest, and then some from the past, covering deep dives of different PlayStation games. So I'm pumped, Kyle.
I am too. I am very excited. Anytime we can kind of like really go in depth on a single game, I'm really a fan of. Because Trophy Room, we do a lot of news and stuff, and I always feel bad that we don't get a whole lot of time to really talk about what we've been playing. And so why not pick a game, one of the bigger games on PlayStation, and just really talk it out and see how we're feeling and see if this belongs in the Hall of Greatness, if it belong, if it deserves a platinum trophy or not.
Well, and that's the thing. So, for those of you who don't know, our main show is the Trophy Room, a PlayStation podcast. And one of the things that we get a lot from our community is that y'all really seem to like when we do the deep dives, when we do our impressions of the games that are hitting the PlayStation market. So, the Road to Greatness, this was your idea, Kyle, where we're going to cover a game in particular, our thoughts, our feelings as we're going through the game. So please understand, there's going to be spoilers, but we'll let you know. So this episode, I think it covers the prologue of Death Stranding all the way till chapter three, and then that's when we close it off. But it's really your journey with us as we expand on our feelings, our thoughts of this game. And what better way then Death Stranding, a game that nobody still to this day, the game's been out for weeks, we don't know what to make of it,
Yeah,
right?
for
We
sure.
can't
It's
even
definitely a
describe it.
polarizing game in that regards. It is a game I think not a lot of people have ever seen before, and which is kind of like a weird way of saying it, but like there's not, we'll get into it, but it's not a Kojima game in terms of action. It's not a typical open world game. It's very story driven, and there's a lot of, I'm gonna put in quotes, downtime, but it's not really downtime. Everything is for purpose, and that purpose gets brought to the surface the more you get into the game.
Yeah, and I think for like people that love Death Stranding, that get Death Stranding, you get what this game is and you're in.
Absolutely,
I see like a lot of people are going like, it's just stupid. This looks like a walking simulator, or like we're an apologist for liking this game. And just to let the record show, I love this game.
Same.
So like it sucks where you can't like something without people just trying to naysay it, you know, or trying to be like, oh, you're just kissing Kojima's butt. But it's just like, no, like I'm not a Kojima fan.
Yeah. Newsflash, this is the first real Kojima game that I am going to finish from beginning to end.
Same exact thing here, right? Like I've seen my brother play Metal Gear Solid 2, but like other than that, I tried getting into 5, I just couldn't. There's something about this game where it's hard to describe, but I'm just in on it. So with that, Kyle, talk about.
Like Death Stranding, right? Kojima. How'd we get here? The origin of Death Stranding. After a lengthy corporate conflict with Konami as a restricted subsidiary, Kojima Productions closed in July 2015 and reformed as an independent video game developer and studio in December of that year. The same month, Hideo Kojima announced his partnership with Sony Interactive Entertainment, at the time led by Andrew House, to make a new PlayStation game. So it was a long time. If you have followed Metal Gear Solid 5's development, you know just how hard it was for Kojima to get his vision in that game, and it just felt like a not great work relationship there.
I mean, you heard the horror stories out of the Kojima offices where, like, if they didn't like your work, they would, like, demote you to being the janitor, right? Like, they would watch you. There was cameras where people felt like they were being watched by the company. It was Big Brother. And so to see this nasty divorce between Kojima and Konami was really interesting to me. For me, I was excited to get into Silent Hills, where this was a horror game by Kojima. Kojima is a huge horror nut. And so to see that mind in a horror setting had me interested. Like, I believe Alana Pierce on Twitter a few days ago was just like, this game was supposed to be so weird that you were supposed to sign a waiver. And where it was that, like, this game would send you emails and texts.
Oh, boy. Yeah. I don't know if I would like that.
Yeah. And so, like, that is crazy. And it kind of goes to show where Kojima's mind was when it came to social media and how some of those ideas in PT kind of come back
in Death Stranding.
Yeah.
Including some familiar faces in PT, which we'll get to in a second. The following June of E3 2016, Kojima showed up on Sony's E3 stage with a trailer, shocking a lot of us that he even had a trailer to show.
Yeah.
And it was pretty substantial as far as the trailer goes.
I mean, that scene of him on the beach is in the game. Like, not a lot of people will, like, when you see that scene hit in the game, you're like, oh my god,
yeah,
they really used everything here. That was awesome. And yeah, to see him walk down, like, the floaty white stairs tiles that were, like, coming
out.
Such a baller move, man.
Yeah.
Oh, it's amazing.
It was after that Kojima and Mark Cerny, lead system architect of the PlayStation 4, spent 2 weeks in January 2016 looking for a game engine on which to develop the game. One of two remaining candidates had been used to create that teaser trailer. Guerrilla Games would later be announced as a collaborator on the development of the game, as it was providing their proprietary game engine, Decima. Kojima Productions' meeting room, was recreated in the engine as a reference of accuracy and for the purpose of testing physically based lighting. So without Kojima going on his tour of Sony Studios, looking for a game engine to really bring this game to life, we wouldn't have settled on the Decima engine, which is a great one. It's beautiful. We all love Horizon Zero Dawn. It's such a great game.
You know, playing through this game, I'm just like, what is Horizon 2 going to look like?
Absolutely.
It's stunning. Yeah.
Absolutely stunning. And then the game entered full development in the year of 2017. So the teaser trailer was just made kind of just like, hey, this is what we're working on. And then a full 6 months later, game ramped up into full production.
Wow.
In March of 2019, Hideo Kojima said that Death Stranding was slightly behind its release date schedule, and that he himself was testing and adjusting the gameplay day by day, defining that phase of development as critical. Now, a lot of people in the PlayStation world, PlayStation fans, they were skeptical, right, that this game was even coming out this year.
Yeah.
Because of this. Because all we were seeing were trailers, right? Nobody was seeing gameplay. What is this game? And this was kind of like, for me, I always believed it would be 2019, just because like Kojima himself said he wanted it out in 2019.
It's just weird because of how fast that is, right? Like,
yeah,
what is this, like, a little over 2 years in development?
Absolutely. Yeah, two, like, full years of development.
That is crazy to get this game out there. Now, again, there's not as many systems like in your face systems, but there's a lot of things that you're playing here with the physics of this game that I mean, even just the vistas as well.
Yeah.
Amazing. So sure. Again, stunned. It's cool. 2 years development. Who knew?
And then in a few months later, a trailer released in May of 2019. That same trailer also revealed the release date of November 8th, 2019, which ended up being the actual release date. And this was the trailer that was on Twitch and had, what, over 100,000 people just sitting there watching Hamprit slowly fading away.
Yeah.
Which was pretty awesome. I think that was a great way to build the hype for this game. Did that Amazing. Do anything for you, Joe?
Yeah, man. So I'm a big PR nut. That's what I like. I like PR and marketing. And so seeing this, it blows my mind of like Sony's PR team. I'm just in awe of. It's like, wow, this is, I could not think of this. I imagine being in the boardroom of like, these people have no idea what this game is, let alone us.
Right? Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
And they're just like, okay, so how do we tease this? And I wonder how much influence Kojima had on it because of how hands-on Kojima is with everything. He has to be part of the process. So
yeah,
I want to know what say he had. I think it probably majority.
Right? Yeah. And in an accompanying blog post to that trailer, Kojima explained that the game's core theme was the true importance of forging connections with others, referring to the player's goal of reconnecting an isolated and fractured society to bridge its divides and to create new bonds or strands with other players around the globe. And obviously, now that the game is out, we played it, there's not a truer sentence ever said when it comes to describing a game.
Oh, yeah.
That is basically one of the biggest gameplay hooks and gameplay mechanics of this game.
It constantly beat you over the head with it, man.
But it's in a great way. America. It's in a great way, right? It's not like you are going through the game, and we'll get into this like when we actually go through the game, but it's all about helping out other players. It's very Journey-esque in its design, which I love.
Yeah. I mean, again, we'll talk about it, but when we were seeing this as like, oh, I'm just walking around, I was the biggest skeptic. And as you guys all know, I've been on a roller coaster of emotions with this game. I was on board with it, then I'm not on board with it, I'm on board with it.
You now pre-ordered the BB version, then you
and now
didn't.
I'm regretting that I didn't pick it up. It's just like, it's all these things. It's all these things. So with that, Kyle, shall we get into the settings?
Oh, let's get into it.
Well, are
Where's
you holding
this game
on to something?
Take place? Yes.
All right. Good. Prepare for the setting of this game. The game is set in an apocalyptic United States, where a cataclysmic event known as the Death Stranding has caused beached things, or known as BTs, invisible creatures originated from the quote-unquote beach, a land said to be linked to the afterlife. To begin roaming the Earth, BTs cause explosions known as void out. When they consume the dead of... Okay, I'm going to cut the voice. It's hard enough with dyslexia. So they cause explosions called void outs when they consume the dead and produce rain known as timefall that rapidly ages and deteriorates anything it hits, which we're going to talk about heavily, and how there are some plot holes to this game that I can't get over. These events damage the country's infrastructure, leading its remaining population to be confine themselves to remote colonies known as Knots, which form the remaining United Cities of America. These colonies have since relied on the services of a company known as Bridges, whose porters brave the BTs, bandits, and terrorists to deliver supplies to cities. Bridges also performs various governmental functions on the behalf of the UCA. If they achieve a mental connection to a bridge baby, a BB, a premature child reflecting the state between life and death, it is possible for a person to sense a presence of a beach thing, or BB, or sorry, BT. Porters carry a BB with them, which is stored in a pod for simulating a mother's womb, a condition known as dooms, depending on its severity, also allows a person to naturally see, sense, or even control a BT. There are also individuals known as repatuates who can travel back from the stream. Again, we're going to talk a lot about this. This is a lot. A place between the world of the living and the beach upon death. As such, these individuals effectively return from death through their deaths will stir a cause of void outs if killed during a contact of a BT. So,
yeah. a lot of stuff in terms,
a lot of stuff, a lot of vocab work. Essentially, what has happened is the reverse of the Big Bang. And what you're trying to kind of figure out during this game is what exactly is this Death Stranding? What caused it? Because what has essentially happened is that the world of the living and the world of the dead have collided. And these beach things, these BTs, are stranded from the world of the dead into the world of the living. And so if a person dies in the world of Death Stranding, you actually have to burn their body in a special location away from the city, because those toxins, the fumes, actually attracts BTs. So they try to make it so that you go to a furnace up top of a mountain, the highest peak, so that it has no contact with the nearest city, so that BTs will go to the furnace and not the city, which I found insanely fascinating. So with that, Kyle, post-apocalyptic America, we got these cities all over the place that are completely cut off from one another. Everybody's feeling, again, separate, right? They are broken down people. The prologue of this game, Kyle.
Yeah. Where we first get into who Sam is. Norman Reedus, who was, again, in Kojima's last project at Konami, PT, or Silent Hills, if you get through the whole demo.
Yeah.
He shows up at the end as being like a guest cameo, who Kojima was working on that game alongside Guillermo del Toro, who we will meet in a bit. But yeah, we see Norman Reedus, Sam Porter Bridges, driving through this the United Cities of America.
Well, even before that, if you don't mind me cutting you off.
Oh yes, please.
We got this quote about civilization and about a rope leading people to civilization. If you had fire and you had rope, you had the cornerstones of starting a civilization. And then it starts with Sam Porter Bridges saying, first there was a bang. That bang created the universe. Then there was another bang that caused our planet spinning into orbit. Then there was another bang that caused life on this planet. Then the last bang, and it cuts to Sam on the bike, setting up what Death Stranding is. Again, one bang brought life. This bang brought complete and utter death. So yeah, Kyle, continue. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, so he's driving along, not knowing what he's really doing as of yet. And then I believe the rain starts. Am I wrong in that assessment, Joe?
Yeah, it starts raining, and you kind of see he's riding a broken down bike, right? It's kind of rusted and it's all kind of broken apart. He's in between a job right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even his hood. Usually, when like you walk into the rain, the hood automatically, you know, automatically covers your head. This one he has to put on. So, right off the bat, you see that he's working with what he's got. And yeah, the timefall starts happening. And he, again, he's alerted to it. And you see a rain drop out on his hair and actually graze a piece of his hair. And so he puts on the helmet and he starts driving.
So that is what we met when Joe was reading the setting. Yeah. Timefall is rain, but that ages anything that it touches.
Yeah.
So once it starts raining, things are going to start aging very quickly.
Yeah. And even that, like when you see the rain touch things in certain cinematics, and it's even kind of gone into in depth in later chapters, but it'll bring something to life, kill it, and then bring something else to life, and then kill it, and then bring something to life again. It's pretty cool. It does the death and decay cycle over and over again. But yeah, he starts riding and he's trying to beat this storm. And he's seeing the birds that are pretty much dunzos overhead dropping on him. And so it's giving you the sense of this is what Timefall does. It ages you until it kills you. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden he's met by a woman just standing there in the middle of the road. And he tries to dodge her, but he ends up, you know, sliding his bike all over the place. Yep. And that's the first portion of this game. It's mm-hmm. like, okay, you lost your bike. Now you have to pick up your shit. You got to pick up everything you've lost. And it shows you the fundamentals of what this game is right off the bat. It teaches you how to place things up on yourself. It teaches you how to balance. And it teaches you how to walk around. It's really just teaching you movement straight off the bat.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Which is like the biggest game mechanic of this game.
Yeah.
is balance very early on in the game when you are before you get like certain materials and upgrades to your gear. Mm-hmm. Sam is very clumsy. Sam, you cut the L2 and R2 triggers used to help balance him.
Yeah.
So if the rocks, like most open world games, if you see rocks, your character just kind of just walks right over them, walks through them, maybe. No real noticeable difference when they're walking in a rocky area. In Death Stranding, if you walk anywhere near the rocks, you're going to see Sam struggle because it's uneasy ground. If he's leaning to the right, like if he starts leaning, you got to grab L2 to kind of ride him up.
Yeah.
And same thing, if he's leaning left, you got to grab R2 to help him and ride him right. Thing.
A lot of people are going to listen to this. If you're still listening and you haven't played Death Stranding, what are you going to play this game? But you're like, how is this fun? It's something you literally have to experience. The thing is, I never experienced the hardships of balancing
Sam. I didn't either, yeah.
I was just like, okay, so this is what I'm doing. And what it is what gameplay is at the end of the day is keeping your hands in constant movement and keeping your brain occupied. Mm-hmm. Right? That's what gameplay is. That's why if you're just moving around through the game just using the analog sticks, you get bored after a while because your brain isn't tactilely thinking of where to hit the next button at. Death Stranding keeps it interesting because you're keeping on pressing the buttons of your controller. That's what gameplay is, and that's what Kojima saws really cleverly with traversal through this game, mm-hmm. is it's constantly a puzzle. You're constantly thinking of how to make the right movement at what time.
And I'm forgetting, Joe. Does Sam have his scanner at this point?
Yes, that's the first thing as well.
Okay, so scanner is very much like, I'm trying to think of... I mean, Horizon had a scanner, right? Her focus.
I forget what this one's called. I think it's called like an Odin deck?
Odorek scanner. It's Odorek, a shoulder-mounted mechanical sensor that is attached to the BBs. It looks like a hand...
Yeah.
And it kind of like it makes a pulse out. And what it does specifically for when it comes to terrain, it will show how the ground looks. Yep. So like if it's blue, that is flat, you don't really have to worry about falling. Yellow, you got to be a little bit more cautious. Red, you have to find another route or use your tools, which we'll get into in a second, to traverse or over it.
Yeah, and also what it does is it scans literally the whole environment around you. So it'll scan the floor, and then it'll scan life, mm-hmm. if there is it. So, like, you know, if enemies nearby. It'll also scan dropped cargo, either from players or just randomly scattered throughout the area. So in the beginning, you're scanning, seeing what you've dropped and placing it back onto your back. And then you make it to the cave where we meet the woman that mm-hmm. we almost hit with our fucking bike.
Which
that
is one of the
insurance policy.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Which is one of the trailers, again, using a trailer that was already shown and putting the full thing in the game and maybe extending it a little bit afterwards.
Here we get our first BT, our first beach thing, again, mm-hmm. because we're in the Timefall. That's where these things live. So you could kind of think of it as a herd constantly moving. We get our first BT, and Sam senses it. She could see him. His
skin starts turning red. He's getting like a rash. He can sense something's up.
Yep. He's getting goosebumps for the most part. And after the BT leaves, we get to learn about dooms, which dooms are, for the sake of making it short, the midichlorians.
Yeah, let me give you the definition.
Sure.
Dooms is an affliction that came as a result of the Death Stranding. Yep. Humans who possess dooms are connected more directly to the beach and have supernatural powers as a result.
Yes.
Measurable in levels. The higher the level, the more abilities a doom sufferer has.
Again, if you watch Star Wars, it's midichlorians.
Yeah.
So, if you hated midichlorians, you're going to hate this too. Sorry. You can't avoid them. And we find that Sam is a level 2, right? Mm-hmm. Again, the beach is a place between life and death. Everybody has their own beach.
It's like purgatory.
It's kind of like purgatory. So, his connection to his beach is about a 2, so he's able to see them. We don't know. I believe Fragile's is about, I think she said like a 5?
Hers, I thought was a 7.
No, that's Higgs.
Oh, okay. My Higgs apologies. Is a 7.
Yeah,
I forgot which. In a later chapter, she explains what her level is and gives her whatever her power is.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And we'll say it right off the bat here because she does it twice.
Yep.
Her ability is that she can teleport. And when she teleports, it's the dopest thing ever.
Yeah.
And
it's she pops like, in and out. She basically, what she explains later is she goes to the beach and then uses the beach to teleport to another location.
Yes. And we'll get into the weeds about that because it's super interesting.
Yes.
But yeah, she essentially can teleport like Nightcrawler. So if she's able to hold you, she's able to teleport you. The only thing is, it's only what you're wearing, right? For the sake of keeping things PG-13 here in the States. But it's literally just you.
Yeah.
So That's the first thing. And mm-hmm. She's trying to recruit you to the other company, which is Fragile. And you're just like, I don't want anything to do with this. And she's just like, all right, fine, whatever. I'm going to go. I'll see you later, Porter Bridges.
Which is her name, Fragile. Yeah.
Fragile.
So conceited. You have the whole company named after you.
I mean, it's kind of like, I don't know. I was going to say, it's kind of like Apple. Remember Tim Apple? He invented the whole thing. Next, we get, you're out of the cave, and now you're into the real world. And I kind of took the cave as the cave analogy, like Plato's the cave. Now you're entering the world and seeing it for what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And now it is the first 30 minutes is what this game is. Get from point A to point B. Map it out and get there. And you're doing it tool-less. So the first 2 gameplay loops is teaching you, okay, here's how the scanner works. Now that you've practiced how to, walk on your 2 legs, now do it for real. And that first walking around, just taking in the environment, I was just like, this is what I wanted out of a video game. I didn't know I wanted it.
Yeah.
But I say this a lot, Skill Up Review, he nailed it. If you're the type of person that likes Skyrim, you wanted to jump on that mountain, get to the top. If you're all about exploration of video games, this is totally up your alley. This is, I was hooked. I was just like, I really,
absolutely.
I was really liking it from the start. And
yeah,
my advice to you is if you like the first 2 chapters, it does get better at chapter 3.
Absolutely. Whole ton.
But if you're in it in the first 2 chapters, you're genuinely going to like what you're going to get.
As far as I'm concerned, just being in that world and how beautiful it is, I was in it. Like, me just walking around, just acknowledging just how gorgeous this
can we talk about the water?
Is. Oh, the water is some of the best water in game. We're pulling an IGN right here.
Yeah,
the opposite. Not enough water. This is like beautiful water. It's perfect water.
Yeah, like Sea of Thieves was a game where it's just like, listen, there's not much here, but
the water is
awesome. The water, though. And this is like, this is as real gets. I always appreciate the weird shit in games, small little things. But like, that river looks like a river. When there's fog overhead, I'm just like, that's real fog, and dude.
Going back to like the timefall, the rain, it's really great. When you're in it, like, it sucks. You can, it feels like you're walking in the rain outside.
Yeah. And shout out to the sound department of this game. The crunch of your footsteps, the flow of the rivers, you're stepping it, like it's
when you're sliding down a hillside or you're tripping, it's real good.
Yeah. And then you make your first delivery.
Yep.
And I forget the city. I think it's Central.
Just going to look that up. I think it's Central Knot as well. Yes.
And you make your first delivery, and you're met by a man named Igor. Igor has a bridge baby with a little Luden keychain. That's going to be significant in a bit. Igor tells you, hey, listen, I need your help.
This is the Luden's keychain, by the way. I don't know if you can see that.
I have him up here, too.
Yeah,
he's adorable. He's a little buddy. Igor's like, listen, dude, you're Sam Porter Bridges. I know you. You have dooms. I need your help. You can sense BTs. We got someone who just killed himself. Because, again, they couldn't take the loneliness, couldn't take the disconnection. This person just gone up off themselves. We don't even know how much time left until they become a beach thing.
Yeah, right. The void outs we mentioned. Like, if we don't burn the body quick enough, the time fall will cause a necrosis of the body and it'll cause a void out, which is basically, think of it as a nuclear bomb. It will destroy
everything. It'll just make a crater. Yeah. So you want to get this body out as fast as possible before it turns into a BT, before, seriously, more BTs get attracted to it and they just, there's no time. It could fly and just nuke the city. Parks and Rec service right there. You need to help this guy. And so you make a deal with him and you enter a contract. That's what they're called. So anytime you agree to something, you're entering into a contract. That's the first thing I was like, oh, this is interesting. Because Igor's like, okay, there's no time. It could fly. And then he does something to his wrist, and he's just like, you've entered a contract with Bridges. And you're like, fuck it. And you shake his hand. Mm-hmm. And you go off. And this is the next cinematic. A lot of the prologue, chapter one and chapter two, cinematic heavy.
Another trailer we saw.
Yeah. Shit goes south. The engine dies in the middle of BT territory, in the middle of a time fall, in order to burn this fucking
body. Is that also, really quickly...
Yeah.
Is that the first moment where we get the beautiful music while we're going across the world? I think we're in the back of the truck and we're getting, I believe it's Lil Roar, which is featured heavily in this game.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
We get this beautiful song, just kind of like you're in the back of the truck with them. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, shit gets real and BT stopped it. And it's, That is the thing that keeps happening in this game, where you are getting closer and closer to a checkpoint and getting to a new area. The game rewards you with this really awesome sounding, ethereal, ambiotic, I don't even know if that's a word, music that kind of like pulls you into the moment and helps kind of like connects me to the world. Kind of like when I first read Harry Potter, I would listen to Blink-182 at the same time. So now whenever I hear some of those Blink-182 songs, I can think of Harry Potter. To me, they kind of connect the two things together.
I think of Disturbed. When I think of like Disturbed, I think of World of Warcraft.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. Everyone's got that. Yeah.
Everybody's got that. So, then your car stops again, and you find out, you see a mysterious figure. That's Higgs. And he creates a big-ass monster in front of you. And things just go crazy. You try to drive and you end up hitting an obstacle in your way and the car flips over. And then the driver is just pinned. You see Igor trying to help the guy up. And then BTs start coming.
Yeah.
And the thing with BTs is they can sense your breathing. So you have to hold your breath while you're around them. Or else they'll come and they'll be a big puddle of ooze.
Yeah.
Then they'll grip you and they'll drag you down. Mm-hmm. In this sense, Higgs is controlling a huge BT. We're talking it is a mecha BT.
Yeah.
And it's lifting Igor up as he's trying to shoot his way out.
And a super cool thing that this cutscene is teaching you a mechanic.
Yeah.
Right? It's telling you BT's around, you need to hold your breath and make as little noise as possible.
Yep. And the cool thing too is you take his BB from him and you take it so you could try to get out of that situation.
Yep. But because once you plug your scanner into the BT, then you can
start
sensing the scanner will flick towards where the next BT is, so you kind of have to make sure you see where it's looking, because that's where the BT is. You kind of have to stay away.
Yeah. And another tip, here's the first tip here. If you're having trouble scanning BTs, All right. Right off the bat here. You have to stop in place. I did not know this.
Yeah.
You have to stop in place and scan.
You can't scan while you're moving. They won't pop up.
Yeah. You don't see them. You're in the clear, but then you'll see them. And then that's when shit gets real and shit gets real tense.
Yeah, for sure.
So that's when you start holding your breath.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, you get eaten. That's what they refer to you when you die, and you cause a void out. And mm-hmm. Central Knot City goes because of it, which is fucking nuts.
Yep.
The next thing you do, you wake up, and you're in a bunker, and you're meted by Guillermo del Toro, my man, or the dead man. Here's a question for you, Kyle.
Yeah.
Were you weirded out that it wasn't del Toro's voice?
So here's the thing. As I was playing, I just assumed it was. And then I think you told me that last week or something. I was like, oh, shit. Yeah, no, that is not his voice. I did not put the two together. But now I can't not recognize it. And it's not. It's like always weirding me out.
My thing is, I don't have a problem with it whatsoever.
Oh, I don't either. But now that I know that it's not exactly his voice, I can kind of tell.
From one Hispanic to the other, I think he's Mexican, actually. Whatever. From one Spaniard to the other, old colony, still family. They're sorry about the whole indentured servitude and mass murder. But we're cool, right? I didn't mind it. I felt like, oh, yeah, it was Spanish enough where I was just like, that's a Spanish voice on a Spanish body. I'm good to go. And he tells you that you need to make a delivery to the president. And what was it? It's not Novocaine. Jesus Christ. Morphine. Totally different. Totally different. But yeah, you need to make this delivery of morphine. Sam's really reluctant to do it, and you find out the president is his mom.
Yeah.
Stop right there. That was the first thing. I was just like, okay, this is corny.
Yeah, it's a little corny.
This is typical. This is some Japanese writing right here, if I've ever seen it. Okay, whatever. The last 20 minutes have been rad. Let's go talk to this chick.
Before we even know that the president is Sam's mom, we're introduced to Guillermo's character, whose name is Dead Man.
Yep.
And I believe we are introduced to Die Hard Man as well.
Yep.
So those names alone, also craziness.
Yeah. <it's>, to me, I'm like, okay, this is Kojima. This is weird names. Fine. Also a video game. I'm not gonna. I know we like. Is it weird that we're like we give video games a pass for writing?
It's a little weird.
Yeah,
it's a little weird. But I'm whatever. Okay
let's still
I'm
okay do it.
Yeah.
So yeah, the president kind of runs you down. Sorry for the cough, by the way. The president kind of runs down the plot of this game. She is dying of cancer. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Right? Cancer sucks. It took my grandpa. It's ironically taking this lady as well.
Mm-hmm.
And your job is to help reconnect America city by city. Go from the East Coast to the West Coast. Your sister, Amelie, she has been on this journey. And now you just kind of need to use this key to kind of start up the ignition. If she was pretty much planting an engine down. And now you kind of have to, you know, press the button, make the ignition go off.
Do all the beep boops on the buttons to make it all connect.
At the same time, connect more cities to make it to Amelie. Because, mm-hmm. spoiler alert, only kidding, already there. She's been kidnapped, held hostage by this terrorist group at Edge Knot City. That's the place. That's where you need to go.
Which is West Coast America.
Yeah. Maybe, you know what? We don't know yet. Probably San Francisco, if I were to bet.
That's what I actually had in my mind as well. I don't know why.
It's either LA or San Fran.
Yeah.
You know, something tells me that that's where the apocalypse would be held. but yeah, and that this terrorist group called the Homo Demons, insert laughter here, they're not gay demons.
Well, it's Latin for madman.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah, it's Latin for madman.
So wait, homo means mad in...
Homo what? Means man.
Oh.
Homo sapiens? Oh,
so, yeah. so, okay, so Okay, so what does mad mean in Latin? Is
demons? I'm pretty sure demons is mad in.
Okay, so it's mad
or demons.
Okay.
But they're a group of militant separatists that deliberately trigger void outs across the UCA. Yeah. That's their whole goal.
We don't know why they're doing this. Nope. They're just doing it. And again, we just saw their leader. He just fucked you up just a second ago.
Yeah.
Okay. Other than the name aside, dope. Like,
yeah.
We're gonna talk about Higgs in a second.
when we get to the end.
But like, dope. But a problem here, and it's what I've been dealing with ever. If I'm a terrorist, right? Not saying I am American. I need to
you better not.
Love be. This freedom. Love this freedom.
Please I will leave the show right now.
Yeah. I can't stress it enough. Freedom is dope. Don't like a president, but wouldn't do anything bad. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to vote him out. That's what we're doing.
That's what we are. Yes, we are.
Sorry, it got too political. But I'm, you say terrorist, and you're like, if I were, and then things get a little hairy.
You say that like people actually follow that up in the same form.
Right.
Anytime anyone says terrorist, as, you know, if I were. No, no one ever follows that up like that.
All right, let's walk back the walk back. Red or blue, I don't care. I'm just not a man.
I love this show so much already.
I seriously do. But if I were a bad person, I would be trying, like, if Sam fixed the city, well, then I'd probably just go and try to fuck up that connection.
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing that's the one plot hole that consistently pings at me throughout this game. Is like, well, if he made a connection to this city, then I just want to cut that connection or fuck up that city a little bit. Or rough up someone
kinda,
like the Mafia.
That's kind of what he tries.
Okay.
Where we'll be ending this episode at. That end of that chapter is kind of him trying.
Okay.
Right? Because that's one of the biggest cities around. That is like integral to kind of get all this. I'm trying to remember the name of it. The Chiral Network, right?
Yes. And that's the next thing. Do you have that vocab up?
I do. The Chirilium is a material that was previously invisible to humans, but became visible after the Death Stranding. A mineral or element that can power items to levels previously unachievable by humans. Chirilium attracts BTs and is also left behind by them when they are killed. So that's another reason why when somebody is... somebody's dead and you have to get them to that incinerator quickly or else the Chirilium's going to build up inside that body and it's just going to attract them all to you.
No time. They can fly. So, so what you're trying to do is you're trying to set up this network of the Chiral Network, which essentially makes it so that these cities could tap into the Death Stranding and help build things on the spot, which is pretty dope. And it's kind of like the internet, but interdimensional. That's what you're doing in the most layman's of terms.
Mm-hmm.
So your first mission for chapter one, we're still on chapter one, is you now have to go out. The president has died. Okay. Spoiler alert.
Yep.
After that touching scene, she's passed on. This is her dying wish, is for you to reconnect America. Now you got to burn this broad's body though.
Yeah.
So it's now teaching you how to traverse the world with tools. You got your boots, you got your ladders, you got your rappel ropes, right?
Yep. climbing anchors.
You got everything you need to do to traverse the world, man. I'm in.
Yeah. And here's my tip, because especially at this part where you're transporting Bridget, the president's body, up to the incinerators, Sam is very rocky on his feet. A lot of swaying back and forth because, you know, body's big and it's basically just sitting in a backpack. Yeah. So what I do pretty much when I play the game, instead of walking normally, I just keep the shoulder triggers down the whole time.
Dude, you move more slowly, yeah,
but you are way more stable. You never fall.
Funny thing. I was going to mention this on the trophy room this week, but when I was playing, Jedi Fallen Order.
Yeah.
I had the triggers down like all the time. I was like, oh, wait, see it?
Yeah.
I got to rethink this.
Yep.
It literally, with every game, I'm kind of like taken aback. I'm like, oh wait, I gotta rework my mind about
it. Yeah,
traversing's a lot easier in these games.
Yep.
Also, fun fact: when you go out, you accept an order from various cities to earn their trust or to help with materials back and forth to help build your reputation with those places. You can just what I do is I put everything on my back, everything I can, and then right when I'm out of the menu, I go into my items, you press triangle, and it automatically balances your character out. It puts everything where you need it to be.
Which is great.
To me, it's an extra step, but fine.
Yeah.
So if I'm not the guy that'd be like, I want this there, or my gun on my tool rack, I'm just like, put it where it needs to be, I'm fine.
And speaking of extra steps, I think this is the perfect time to say something that I'm not a huge fan of this game.
Go for it.
This game does everything extra. And that even comes to, like, cutscenes. There will be a little tiny cutscene before another little tiny cutscene before you can then move on and select an item. Or going to put an item from your back into your locker, you have to back out and go back into the menu, go to the other selection, back out, and then the rearrange your back. It's very archaic. Obtuse. It's too much.
Yeah, it's very obtuse, and it's very menu-heavy, which I hate to say forgiving because I know it's, again, Japanese creator, Japanese game. I know that they love their menus. So I knew right off the get-go that, like, if this game's going to play like a Final Fantasy game, again, my only bridge to what a Japanese-developed game is, then I know I'm going to hit a lot of menus and a lot of instructions. Yeah, but I have that same complaint, too, of, like, to do the simplest thing, even like when you're in your private room, which you get acquainted to beginning of the game, you have your Monster Energy drinks.
Which,
talk about.
Wow. That's talk about branding and marketing, right? Just having, it's not even like a fake Monster Energy drink. No, it's straight up the Monster Green drink. It's the same can. Also, when Sam, you have to like have him go take a shower and use the bathroom and stuff. Yeah. When you go number two in the shower, there's an ad for The Walking Dead that pops up on the shower thing.
Right,
like,
you know what,
Kojima.
Yeah. Let's not even talk about the first, like, traversal with tools. Let's just talk about taking a stool.
Let's just talk about this private room for a second. It's a lot.
Okay. You look around this private room, you see all your equipment. And this is actually, I love this part of the game.
Mm-hmm.
They tell you about the suits of this game. They tell you that red, if you're wearing a red suit or you see someone in red, which you never will, that's a medic. You know that they're doing a medic shit. Okay, we don't know what type of medic shit, but they're doing something medical. If you see a porter in orange, that is someone that is disposing of a body.
Yep.
And just like anybody who's disposing a body, you want to avoid those people. Then you get your blue suit, which is what you're going to be seeing and wearing the most of. That is you delivering packages, and then people in black suits are security forces. They're the people with guns that go shooty, shooty, bang, bang, as guns usually operate. I love that. And then you see the incubator with the BB.
Mm-hmm.
Your BB is special, and what happens is, due to every different environment, and since the pod is pretty much, it is a synthetic womb, it's just connecting back to the Snow Mother. It's connecting back, and the womb is reorganizing itself. Some type of weird science shit.
Yeah. Dope.
Now let's get to the Monster Energy drink. I'm going to say it right here, right now. I usually hate this.
Uh-huh.
I don't know why with this game. Even your canteen has Monster Energy drink, and I am somehow okay with it. It doesn't faze me, and it bothers me when people complain about it.
Oh, yeah. It doesn't faze me either. I just find it really, really funny.
It's like, it's there, whatever, just drink it. I need my stamina.
Yeah.
Who cares if Monster Energy drink actually dehydrates you? Mm-hmm. Who cares if that's bad for your heart? You know, it's not mine, it's Sam's. The only thing I'm thinking is, when this guy pees, it's fucking green.
Yeah, it is. He doesn't intake any water.
Yeah, there's no way it doesn't burn.
Which, actually, hold on a second. Maybe I didn't think about this.
What?
Maybe the only water is Timefall water, and you can't drink it?
Well, I mean, what's... I mean, Monster Energy drink has to have water in it. That's the other weird thing with Timefall. That's the other weird plot hole.
Yeah.
You gotta really think about it. It sinks into the soil. There's a whole lot of science-y shit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because, like, if that Timefall water goes into regular water, well, then that's bad water.
Yeah.
It's, again, yeah. Plot hole.
Well, yeah, and what is the shower water that he's using to shower?
And that is why we don't think that deep.
That's true. That is true.
First big plot hole right here.
Also, and it might sound silly, like, oh, yeah, have Sam go take a shower and use the bathroom. Yeah. But as we progress through these early chapters, by doing that, there's another character who basically collects the runoff from this stuff, Hartman, and creates these grenades for you from these things, which will help in the fight against the BTs. Which, spoiler alert for me, I haven't used any of those grenades. Not
I've
once.
Used them once or twice. I used them once or twice. Do I have a problem with that? Actually, no. It makes sense.
Uh-huh.
It actually makes sense.
In this world, right?
Yeah. Because I forgot to mention that. Sorry, on my part. In the cinematic, you got a bum leg and your leg was cut. And when the BT stepped on your blood, it burned them. So your DNA hurts these beach things. Mm-hmm. There's never been, until this point in time, an injured BT before. No one's been able to even re-kill these things.
Yeah.
Except for, we're going to get to it, Sam. So it makes sense that my piss can hurt these things. It makes sense my duty can as well.
Mm-hmm.
It is what it is. But my problem is, I don't use those enough because... You have a choice in this game if you want to kill a BT or just stun them.
Yeah.
But motherfucker, it's killed or be killed. I'm killing every motherfucker I'm walking into. So I see a BT, I'm throwing a blood grenade at it. I'm not fucking around. I'm shooting bullets at these things.
About a BT. I've only had to fight them once, and that was story related at the end of chapter 3.
Really? I throw some fucking hands, Kyle. I toss them.
Oh.
I throw them. I give a fuck.
When it comes to the other characters, which we'll get to in the later chapter.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I throw hands at all times.
Really?
With them. Oh, yeah. No, I use the Bola gun.
That's
just
so much fun.
And just, like, take them out. But, yeah, BTs, I meticulously sneak around. And I do not, if they're trying to grab me, because they'll come out of the ground. Right. If you get caught, if you're not holding your breath and they catch you.
Right.
It's like a race to get out of their area. And these black tarry bodies, BTs, coming out of the ground and try to grab at you. Yeah. And you have to, like, shake them off and you're kind of struggling.
And if you're not able to shake them off, you have to fight a mini boss.
Yes.
Which they're called a catcher. And it's scary as shit. For me, and let's avoid chapter one. Spoiler alert, you burn your mom's body, and the first encounter with BTs is how to avoid them in-game.
Yep.
So it's about holding your breath. It's about getting back to where you originally were. It's about running away. And then you get to Amelie, and she is now the president at this moment of America. You know, for some reason, again, this is dumb. Story of Death Stranding is half really cool, half really interesting, and then half is like kind of real, not kind of stupid as fuck. Mm-hmm. She's now the president. Again, sounds ridiculous. It is dumb. but again, somehow I'm in for it because this extraterrestrial shit, this other plane of existence bullcrap, this Lovecraftian horror element, I'm so in on.
I think it makes sense for what she gets into and what you've already mentioned, where she is the one that made the trek from east to west to reconnect the cities and really build the groundwork for the UCA and why Sam has to go and connect them all. So to me, it makes sense that she is the next one in charge.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And she's begging you to go on this journey because you have history with Die Hard Man. You don't fucking like him. You don't trust him. I still don't trust this fucking masked motherfucker.
Yeah.
Okay? I still don't. I don't trust you, dude. You wear an ascot. You have a really bad relationship with your mother. And the one thing that I forgot to mention is if you're a person that has been in contact if you're a person with Dooms, but if you've been in contact with Timefall or just with Cryrillium in general, the environment, your senses, your brain kind of goes on overload and your fears become more prevalent. Mm-hmm. So if you have a phobia, your phobias get even more so. So I have bad anxiety, right?
Yeah.
I have a fear of elevators. Mm-hmm. If I was out in the wild too much and in contact with too much Kyrillium, my fear of elevators escalates tenfold.
Yeah.
So he's afraid of being touched as well. Sam is very disconnected from everybody. Amelia begs you to go on this journey, and you're doing it for her. That is why. And so that starts your journey into chapter 2, which is showing you how to reconnect these cities. I believe there is, what, 2 or 3, right?
There's 2 or 3 in the beginning area. Yeah.
Yeah, it's been a hot minute for me. And that is where it opens up to the multiplayer element, which is if you unlock a city, that area around that city, the area depends, gets unlocked to people that are in the game with you. And how you see them is kind of like Dark Souls. You see signs, and some signs are awesome. It'll give you words of encouragement, like, keep it up. Yeah. Or there's BTs here, stay away. Or warning, there's mules.
Yep. And some of those signs, if you walk through them, not only will you award likes to that player, which we'll get into, but some of them actually will restore your stamina. Yeah. The speed boost one, if you're in a vehicle, will actually speed up your car. So all these things that you can put in the world are to benefit not only yourself, but everybody else that is playing this game, which is why I love this game. Yeah. This is why I love it, because it's all about working together, singular mission, and to see the good in other people willing to go out of their way to help other players.
That is my thing, too, as we close out this chapter soon, because we're actually running on almost an hour here.
Yeah.
This is why I love this game, is this multiplayer element. It's, hey, I had trouble building a bridge or getting from this huge gap in the map. Mm-hmm. Someone built a bridge so that I don't have to go through that again. Right? Like, there's a river, so someone put down a ladder as a makeshift bridge for me to cross it.
Yeah.
Hey, there was like a huge mountain that someone climbed, and now they just brought rope for me so that I don't have to go through that journey they did. It made my life easier.
Mm-hmm.
And you're judging a character, or you're judging how good you are in this game by how good you are as a person. It's awesome. The whole one trick is, you can't build a car, or you can't use vehicles, or you can't use certain, you can't use a bridge until you unlock it. And the only way you unlock these things is by unlocking more cities.
Yep.
And
forging connections with all these other people, not that are playing the game, but that are in the world.
Yeah. So, like, for example, I know this isn't in chapter 2, but it's in chapter 3. You get the Bola gun, which zip ties people together.
I love that gun.
This one guy, spoiler alert, the first person you that I recognize, Herman Holst, the new president and CEO of PlayStation Worldwide Games, of first party games. He's a craftsman. He gives you the Bola gun. If you keep doing deliveries from him, you get a better Bola gun. You get a level 2, level 3, level 4 until you max, and then the thing can carry more ammo. It's more efficient, reloads faster.
Yeah.
That's what happens. That's the trick. So you're not just reconnecting cities so that you can use items in the game. You're also going back to those cities so that you could get better vehicles. You could get better bridges. You could get better ladders, which means that the items in your inventory get lighter and more efficient for you.
Yeah, for sure.
So you're always encouraged to make that next step.
Yeah. And there's a handful of people just like Herman's craftsman in each area. So I think before we move out of chapter 2, because chapter 2 can be very long if you want to do everything.
Yeah.
What Joe told me and what I also found out on my own was you can just go through chapter 2 and get to where you need to go to advance the story. And you can come back because of the later upgrades to your gear will make that stuff in 2 so much easier.
Yeah. So, yeah, you want to beeline it, you could beeline it, whatever.
Yeah.
Let's get to the end here.
Sure.
chapter two, we've traversed through the environment. Now we understand the multiplayer elements. You now need to get to Port Knot City, mm-hmm. because through Port Knot City, you're going to take a boat to get to the west portion of the country.
There's a giant lake that was formed after a void out.
Yes. And now you're going, so a lot of America is just fucking obliterated.
Yeah.
You're going to take Fragile's boat over to episode three, which we'll get to in a sec. And that trek is insane.
Yeah, it is.
It's in BT territory. Mm-hmm. And I found very intricate ways of how to navigate it. And so you're really, this is your first big traversal from point A all the way to point fucking Z.
Yeah.
And it is about opening up your map and seeing where you have to go.
Yeah.
But also looking at the map and seeing, oh, there's a gap here. I'm going to need a bridge here.
Yeah.
I'm going to need a rope there. And kind of plotting where you need to go and how you need to move. And absolutely, this is where I actually fought my first BT, Kyle.
Mm. Okay.
I failed. This motherfucker took me and I had to fight him.
Yeah.
And it was there where I was just like, this is terrifying. When you're surrounded by BTs, the just air around you, it's claustrophobic. It adds that horror element so well where absolutely, I couldn't see them well because I didn't know I had to stay still to see them. So it was all kind of guessing games. And when I ran into them, the fight was hectic. I was mm-hmm. panicked. Mm-hmm. I was worried. I was just like, uh-oh, here I am. Here's the end. And when I finally beat him, I was just like, this game's fucking cool.
Yeah.
This thing is dope.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was as stressful as that journey to Port Knot City was for me.
Yeah.
Specifically, getting through that mountain, that first giant mountain of where you need to crest over it, and then you can see Port Knot City in the distance. That was extremely stressful. But that's the thing this game does. When you complete it, you feel so damn accomplished.
Yeah.
Because it's not very video gamey, right?
Yeah.
You're not like, you know, doing what I did in Horizon and jumping up mountainsides to collect an Easter egg. You have to really forge your path and use your markers to kind of plan out where you're going.
Yeah.
It's very much like you're actually hiking.
Yeah.
And you need to find the safest route, and it's awesome.
It also just uses the power of the Decima engine to create these beautiful vistas.
Yeah.
The draw distance of this game is incredible. I would love to know the insides of how they made this draw distance happen, because it gives me the Last of Us effect, where Last of Us does a great job of, in the beginning of the mission, it shows you where you need to go and you're really far away. In the beginning of the mission, you'll see that marker again, that landmark you need to get to. It's a bit closer. It shows that you're making progress. And then at the end, you're finally there and it's this huge expansive thing, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That does it here, but tenfold.
Yeah,
and that's where it plays, like, the first song, and it's just, like, beautiful.
Yeah.
It's just like, okay, sure, you got to the hard part, now let's chill. Now let's relax. And you get to Port City, you make your delivery, you hook up to the chiral network, and then you get on the boat, but you're stopped by Higgs, the leader of the Separatist group, voiced by Troy Baker, Kyle.
So, up to this point, all these characters, Amelie, Bridget, Die Hard Man, Dead Man, a little bit of Heart Man, and Mama, who we didn't mention yet, but she kind of pops in here and there, all beautiful and fantastic performances. They are killing it. It's amazing. But the moment Higgs shows up and Troy Baker opens his mouth and starts voicing him, it is by far my favorite performance in this game. Higgs is so fucking cool, and he is so villainous, and what Troy does to him is so perfect.
Kyle.
And you can't see his face. It's behind this gold mask.
Oh, thank God.
It's so good. I love Higgs as a villain.
God, Kyle. I've been waiting for weeks to see this get off my cheek. You feel the same way.
Yeah.
Higgs. By far, Troy Baker, this is one of his best performances.
Absolutely. You can hear the menace behind his words when he's speaking to you.
Oh, my God. There's just, again, how hard is it to emote just in a mask? How you could feel for someone in a mask.
Yeah.
right, is the hardest thing because you can't see the face. You can't read their lips or read their eyes or their emotions.
Yeah.
Higgs has this air of mystery, and every word he spews out is slick, sly, but venomous.
Yeah.
It's like, looking for you, I've got a connection to the other side. I was like, oh,
it's so good.
Just read me a bedtime story, Higgs, and then blow my house up. Why won't you? You know.
Yeah, and this is the point where you mentioned before Higgs can control BTs. He is a level 7 Dooms person, so he has even more power.
Yeah.
And he just summons this gigantic
dog thing,
dog BT, and this is where I had my very first fight. My only fight so far with a BT.
Damn.
And here's what made this game even cooler, right? We're talking about this connection where other people are helping you out, whatever. I didn't have a whole lot of those blood grenades, right? And I was worried because I think I had 2 when the fight started.
Same.
I throw them. Great. They're doing great damage, right? They're doing whatever. I'm like, oh, shit. I don't have any of my pee grenades. I don't have any shit grenades. I don't have any shower grenades. Well, what am I going to do? Because the Bola gun does not do anything to a BT. It strictly has to do with bodily fluids and blood from Sam. Yeah. So then I'm walking around and I see this hologram, right? And he's waving. He's like, over here. And I go over and I ping him. And he's standing there, which is another player. Who's not really doing this. It's just like
they placed the item in the map.
He's holding another grenade for me.
Yeah.
And so you go up and you take the grenade. And once you take it from him, the hologram just waves and kind of like slowly fades away.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh my God, this is so cool. I love this game.
They build on that even more.
Oh, I can't. I can't wait. But this fight was super cool.
Yeah.
This is again at the end of the fight. Obviously, since there's more game to be played, you kill this BT. You are the first person ever in this world of Death Stranding to have killed a BT, and it's a huge deal. It's just we're off to the races, right?
Dude,
like chapter 2, for as long as it is, has nothing in comparison to what this chapter brought to the table.
This boss fight is awesome because the world pretty much, there's just muck everywhere. There's oil just everywhere that the BTs are made out of.
Yeah.
And you move super slow. But all of a sudden, there's also buildings and rocks that have formed. You're supposed to get up on these rocks, get up on these buildings.
Like those shipping containers.
Exactly. And throwing grenades at them. And the grenades will stun them. So if you do it correctly, what happens is that BT wants to come and eat you, cause a void out. If it gets to you just once, game over.
Yeah,
got to start from the boss fight again, which I learned. I died the first time. Mm. And what it'll do is it'll run into the building that you're on, and then it'll cause the building to collapse. You got to quickly find and jump off from rooftop
and
shipment
container. It's playing into the mechanic of you have to make sure you are balanced.
Yep.
And you know how to balance Sam correctly.
Yep. And if you're doing it correctly as well, when it pounces, you throw the grenade on it, and bam, it'll cancel out that animation, and you'll stun it, and it'll go back into the ooze, and then come back up somewhere else.
Yeah.
This boss fight's incredible.
Yep.
I love this boss fight. It is something very different. And when I beat this fight, I was just like, holy shit. Whew, I'm alive. This is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And I see all these little like grenades everywhere. I'm like, well, I'm gonna pick up all these grenades. And then I thought to myself, oh wait, people are gonna need these grenades.
Yeah.
So I just placed them back into the world.
Yeah.
And then I placed just more grenades. And I was just like, whatever. I'm entering a new level. I'll get to another base. Mm-hmm. And it was that feeling of, see, I was just being a taker, but then I thought about someone else in need. Yeah. And I gave back, and then even more so. And that chapter is chef kiss. It is long, it shows you what this game is going to be, at least on the surface level. And I walked away going, holy shit. Like, I'm only on chapter 3. This might be my game of the year.
Yeah, and it's not a short 3 chapters, right? It's, I think, 6 hours in or something like that.
It's meaty. It could be anywhere from 3 to 6.
Yeah, which is why we say you beeline it during that chapter, because you can get lost delivering to all these other players.
Yeah.
Who I believe is, I think Jeff Keighley's character is in that area. Yeah, I did not even go anywhere near him. Appearance.
Yeah. I didn't either. I was like, Jeff Keighley, I met you in real life, and I don't know what you know. But then we get into chapter 3, which is where I absolutely fall in love with the Death Stranding.
Yeah.
I absolutely fall in love. We will discuss more about you and the relationship with the BB.
Yep.
And the flashbacks to Mads Mikkelsen.
Oh, yeah. We will talk about the cufflink. Yeah.
We will talk about Mama. We will talk about Fragile. And maybe even Dead Man.
Ooh.
But that is for next week.
That's right.
Yeah. So,
or 2 weeks.
2 weeks. Sorry. 2 weeks. Sorry. But you know what? Since this first episode was late, the pilot, you want to do one next week?
Yeah, sure. Why not?
Yeah. Why not? Yeah. So there you go. You got this one this week. Next week, we'll have chapter 3 through 5. Trust me, chapter 4 is super short. Mm-hmm. So there it is.
Yeah.
That's been the pilot episode of The Road to Greatness.
Yeah. Let us know how you liking this format of The Road to Greatness. As you can tell, we're super jazzed to talk about this game, because this game needs to be talked about. It's not a game. Obviously, if you look at review scores, right, this is a game that is viewed in many different ways, and I think it's important that we get to talk about it and really.
I thought you said a porn we get to talk about.
Important. I probably did say that. Never mind. Important for us. Important for us to talk about, because it is such a divisive game, and I think too many people are shitting on it without giving it a chance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And a lot of it's just like fanboys too at the end
for
of the
sure.
day. I see a lot of like Xbox fanboys flaming this game. And listen, I love all games. I love Xbox games, PlayStation. I just like a good game that entertains me. This game is that. I don't feel like I need to defend it. I love this game. I don't care. Sue me. Okay?
For sure.
I got the best lawyers in the business. Meet Rudy Giuliani.
Oh, God. I thought we were done with this. Anyways. Hey, Joe.
Yes.
If they wanted to help us out on Patreon, where can they go?
I'll tell you what, I'll do you one better.
Sure.
They missed an opportunity with the pea grenade and the poop grenade. They should have done a skeet grenade, and they should have called it. They should have put it as a rifle and called it the cum shot. If you like this show, if you like the debauchery, you can
go over
to patreon.com/badbit. Over there, support us at the $5 level. You get this show as it drops on Patreon, and then if you're not a $5 member, that's fine, or just donate at any amount. It really does help the show grow, builds this family that is the Trophy Room. Again, if you like this content, the Trophy Room PlayStation podcast made by the players for the players each and every Thursday. It's awesome. Thank you all so much for making this happen. And again, patreon.com/MrBadBit.
Yeah,
there you go.
And they can find you over at Mr. Badbit on Twitter.
Yep, Bad Bit Games on YouTube and Trophy Room RSS feeds around the globe, except for SoundCloud. Sorry, SoundCloud, you kind of suck.
And you can find me on Twitter at WhoDatNinja73 and on PSN, so send me those friend requests. And until next time, be great.